So we'll quickly move on to the next case, which is United States versus Richard Jones. Yeah. You only had two cases. Mr. Maximovich?
May it please the court, I'm Attorney John Maximovich, and I'm representing the appellant, Richard Jones. Procedurally, this is an appeal from an order revoking Mr. Jones's probation. In a bit of a roundabout way, it presents a very interesting question for review, and that's, why should eyewitness testimony be given more weight in terms of its reliability and probative value than business records, which is exactly what the court did. Now, the facts of this appeal, basically January 29, 2002, at 5:45 p.m., Jones was at work at Kmart. Jones testified to this. He also introduced work records consisting of his work schedule, indicating that he was to be at work on that day and at that time, and also a time card indicating that he indeed did punch in and punch out at that time. At the very same time, January 29, 2002 at 5:45 p.m., Charlie Washington was robbed by three men with guns. Somebody in the neighborhood told Mr. Washington that an individual named Fish was responsible for robbing him. Fish is the nickname that defendant Jones is known by. Washington gave this information to the Hammond police, and the Hammond police set up a photo array for Mr. Washington to view, and wouldn't you know it, Mr. Washington selected Mr. Jones's picture from the photo array. Now,
isn't the problem, though, that eyewitness testimony is, in fact, accepted? I mean, for all, we all know about the horror stories about the flaws with it, but the truth is it's still accepted as competent evidence of identification, and the fact that the time card is there, while certainly important evidence in Mr. Jones' behalf, doesn't rule out that either somebody else checked him in or checked him out, or that he clocked in and talked to his supervisors and slipped out a back door for a while, or any of a number of other things. It's finally credibility, which is for the district judge.
However, it makes it very unlikely that he slipped out without somebody seeing him when the government was unable to introduce any evidence, any witness from Kmart, although they spoke with actually the human resource department of Kmart. They didn't introduce or bring anybody to court to say that Mr. Jones, in fact, was not working that day.
Of course, to say somebody wasn't there is a little difficult in a place like a supermarket or something, because you don't know. If the negative evidence is what you're talking about. Did you see him? Maybe no, but that wouldn't mean he wouldn't be there.
Correct, and our position is that he in fact was there.
Yeah, I understand that, but I say if you have an assembly line or something where somebody, when he leaves, he's conspicuous by his absence, or he has a particular job that somebody else is dependent upon, so he'd have to be there. But that's not the situation here at all. It is possible for somebody to punch in, walk out the front door of the Kmart, and go wherever the hell he wants to, and come back in time to punch out, isn't it?
It's possible. In the sense that so many things are possible.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, this is not, we're not, the time card is less reliable than the identification, because the identification is asked to a time and place, and time card is capable of being misunderstood or being manipulated.
it, obviously it's capable of being misunderstood and manipulated, and also eyewitness testimony is very capable.
Sure. We're back to a credibility question.
And we are.
But each one being considered, give credence to the eyewitness testimony more than the other.
Regrettably, a large part of this case is a credibility question. You have the testimony of the defendant, you have the testimony of the eyewitness, you have nothing to corroborate the testimony of the eyewitness other than his own perceptions. You have a time card and a work schedule to corroborate the testimony of the defendant.
I understand, but we're still back to a credibility finding on a part of the factor finder's fact.
Yes, and as I said, it does raise a very interesting question. Yep. Why should eyewitness testimony be deemed more reliable and probative than a business record?
Of course, if they were interrogating the Kmart people, obviously if someone had said, yeah, I saw him there, then that would have had been fully disclosed and then the end of the case, or at least as far as he's concerned, right?
Yes, it would have.
So we have to assume nobody said anything either way.
We have to assume that when the ATF presented this scenario to Kmart, they didn't want to totally slough off, or use whatever language you want, the ATF. They thought possibly the ATF.
Is there any evidence of that, or is that just your decision?
No, there's no evidence of that.
So you just feel that's a possibility. They were perfectly willing to sell one of their employees down the river to make ATF happy.
No, I'm not saying that they would sell him down the river.
By slopping off the answer, they'd sell him down the river.
I believe Kmart did file for bankruptcy or something like that.
Yeah, well, I don't suppose they filed for bankruptcy on the basis of this case.
I don't think so. Anyway, there were records that Kmart relied on.
Yeah, they said they thought he was there. Maybe that's why they went bankrupt, because enough people were sneaking out and they were paying them. We may have hit on something here, you know.
Yeah, so the appellant would love to see the court rule that business records are much more reliable than eyewitness testimony in reverse. Thank you. If there are any other questions, I'm happy to field them.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Collins?
May it please the court, Mr. Maximovich. This case is entirely about credibility. The district court was presented with conflicting testimony regarding the conduct of the appellant while on probation. The court was essentially presented with a classic question of credibility, the type that judges and juries are presented with on a routine basis. It was alleged that the defendant violated the terms and conditions of his probation by committing a crime, and possessing a gun. The victim in this case, a 54-year-old gentleman who had been employed over 30 years as a forklift operator and had no criminal history, came into court and testified that he was in the alley behind his garage when he was approached by three men wielding guns, that one of these men, the appellant, ordered him to the ground, that he at that point kicked the victim in the stomach, the appellant threatened to kill him, and that the appellant then rifled through his pockets and took $250 while his two associates held.
How close to the place of employment was this?
According to the testimony of the victim, Mr. Washington, Kmart is merely 10 to 15 minutes away from where the robbery occurred. The defendant at the time was living two blocks away from where Mr. Washington, the victim, lived and where the robbery occurred, so very close proximity. This would be a different case if the robbery had happened at 4:30 in the afternoon, the very moment that he was clocking in. Well, not necessarily, in as much as it would make it certainly more interesting, but the whole business card or the business record aspect of the time card is that it merely is a time card. We don't know how the entry was made. It could very well have been made by another individual, someone other than the appellant.
Clock you poke in and rings a bell, is that it?
Presumably. There's no evidence on the record regarding how the entry is made, simply that all is required is that a three-digit code in some fashion be entered into
So you punch in a three-digit code and it shows you were there.
And whether it's an actual, then the applicant, yeah. But all that's required is a three-digit code in order to make
anybody can punch in. How many people in the store, do you know that?
Well, that never came into the course of the record, no.
Would be interesting, wouldn't it?
It would in regard to, again, how many people were about. But again, having this three-digit code is all that's necessary to make the entry. So with regard to your question, anyone could have made the entry other than the appellant. So it wouldn't have mattered when the crime was committed, in as much as it's not dispositive of whether the appellant was actually at the Kmart as opposed to the scene of the crime.
I take it the only testimony that a Kmart supervisor speaks with people at the time they check in comes from Mr. Jones, is that right?
That is correct, John. Yeah. That is correct. Essentially, again, the court, after considering the testimony that was presented, both testimony by the witnesses and the testimony regarding the physical evidence, the time card, and the work schedule. The work schedule, incidentally, the appellant was fired 4 days after the crime was committed for job abandonment. Essentially, he just stopped coming to work. There was also introduced into evidence a copy of his work schedule, and the work schedule showed that he was to be at work the following day. He did not show up on that day. And this is something certainly that the district court had to consider regarding the credibility of the time card as corroboration to the appellant's story.
Why? The time card showed he didn't show up, did it?
The time card showed that he purportedly was at Kmart at the time that the robbery was.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, if he doesn't show up the next day, what does that prove? The time card doesn't show that he wasn't there, or didn't show he was there.
Right, I guess what
I'm saying is, why would you take it into consideration? What does it have to do with it?
It adds weight to the fact, the proposition that the appellant, despite the entry on the time card, was never at Kmart.
Why? Why would it do that? It wasn't, this is the next day. And it doesn't show he was there, and he wasn't there, so what's...
No, I'm sorry, it showed the schedule indicated that he was to be there.
Oh, was to be there, but
yes,
he wasn't there.
Exactly.
So that the fact, you're saying the day before, but there is also the punch in and punch out the day before, isn't there?
Right.
The day of the crime.
Right. The following day, he was scheduled to work, and he just did not show up.
Oh,
4 days later, he's fired for job abandonment, and it goes to...
Yeah.
Sure. And after considering all of this, the judge resolved to its reasonable satisfaction that the defendant had violated the terms and conditions of his probation. This court has held repeatedly that a credibility determination is a province of the fact finder. Here, the district court had the opportunity to consider the testimony, observe the manner and conduct of the witnesses while testifying, and was in a better position, of course, to address or assert the credibility of the witnesses. When a trial judge is chosen whom to believe, the choice becomes conclusive, and unless the trial judge relies on exceedingly improbable testimony, something contrary to the laws of nature, or so improbable on its face that no reasonable fact finder could find it to be so, and that's clearly not the case here. The district court was presented with two permissible views of the evidence.
No, we heard that.
Well, after considering the evidence, the trial court made a credibility determination, and we would ask that you affirm that determination.
Okay, fine. Ms. Klimovich, do you have anything to add? Okay, fine. Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement. I understand you are court appointed, is that right? We appreciate your taking the assignment and your advocacy for your client.
You raised precisely the right points.
Move on to the last case of the